I'm your host, Garth Braithwaite, and this is Web Friends. Welcome to Web Friends. So this week's guest is Suze Hinton, and I had a chance to speak with her boyfriend, who graciously agreed to help introduce her.
My name is Eli Jinsua. I go by Tempvar on the internet. My friends call me Eli.
Like Suze, Eli is a JavaScript developer, and he uses JavaScript in his work and also in some of his personal projects.
I work for a company called NodeSource, and we do consulting for enterprise companies that are looking to get into Node and all of that stuff. And in my free time, which I try to have as much of as possible, I work on robots and controlling CNC mills, like industrial machinery, with JavaScript.
Eli does some pretty interesting stuff with Node hardware integration using C.
I write a lot of C to do with communicating with other hardware bits. So sometimes, like a Node Mini library, for example, I have a few patches in there, which is an add-on to Node so that you can hook into your operating system and actually get MIDI events. Just stuff like that.
On top of JavaScript and C, Eli happens to be a bit of an authority on Suze Hinton as well, which is why I wanted to chat with him.
So Suze is my best friend.
And they became friends despite having a less than ideal first meet.
She saw one of my talks at Empire.js a couple years ago, which was the worst talk I've ever given. There was microphone problems and all this other stuff. But she really liked it, apparently.
And they bonded over their common love for physical manufacturing, though they come at it from different angles.
And she followed me on Twitter, and so we had this back and forth about, you know, oh, I love the stuff that you're printing, I would say to her, and she would, you know, say, oh, I love your CNC project, which, you know, I'm like showing pieces of cut aluminum and whatever.
When I asked Eli to describe Suze, he summed her up in one word.
One word. Amazing.
He did go into a bit more detail.
So I guess to expand on that, she likes cats and robots. She's very curious. And the things that she's curious about, she actually dives extremely deep into them. And a great example of that is 3D printing. Basically, if I ever find anywhere on the internet some new 3D printer or 3D printing technology or some little part or something, she's already seen it.
Suze is really nice, and there are some great qualities that she has that makes her easy to talk to, but there's one quality specifically that Eli mentioned that makes her a great friend.
The way that she empathizes with not only me, but other people. I think, you know, she has this uncanny kind of ability to infer my mood. I've never had that before. I've never had somebody be able to just kind of look in and see how I'm feeling and, you know, say something that, you know, makes me feel better. It's really great.
All in all, she is pretty amazing. So we're going to jump to an interview with Suze Hinton after a quick word from our sponsor.
This episode of Web Friends is sponsored by Campaign Monitor. Sending email campaigns doesn't need to be a chore. Campaign Monitor makes it fun, easy, and beautiful. Try your hand at their template builder and have a responsive email template ready in 60 seconds. Also lets you offer their services to your clients at your prices. And if you need help creating better emails, Campaign Monitor just released a free ebook with their top 100 email campaigns of 2013.
Okay, Suze, thanks so much for joining us on the show. So first question is, what's some of the best advice that you've received, or at least something that's kind of stuck with you?
I think, and this advice has come from so many people, which has been so important to kind of, you know, just confirm that exact advice, which is that no one actually knows what they're doing, like ever. And so when you're bumbling through something, and you're thinking, oh my God, I am so stupid and everyone is so much better at X, Y, Z than me, and why am I even bothering? And that's everything from programming to just trying to cook dinner. You know, you have to remember that everyone guards that secret very closely and wants to look super confident, and they're never going to tell you that they had no idea what they're doing. They're just going to share that success with you at the end, right? And so, you know, that plays on everyone's self-esteem, and we're all just kind of guarding this secret everywhere. And I think it's important that people speak up and say, I have absolutely no idea what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So if you think I'm cool, then awesome. But, you know, it's I'm definitely not an expert. And I think that's definitely been something that kind of fundamentally changed how I looked at both my role models and also my own work. So, you know, you kind of idolize people, but you realize that at some stage, and even currently, they probably don't know what they're doing, but they're actually following something they really love, right? And I think that's what facilitates their learning. And so I found that I've been much more likely to give things a go, and I've been much less hard on myself as a result of that if I struggle or if I'm not really sure what I'm doing.
Yeah. Okay. So confession, this is totally the purpose of this podcast. One of the main reasons, right, is I like to, more than talking about the tech, because there's lots of podcasts for that and there's lots of resources for that, I like to kind of show people that some of these awesome people in the community like you are real people and they're figuring things out and they're not like, they didn't just kind of appear from the ether knowing everything, but that they're just figuring out stuff as they're going. So that is awesome advice.
Yay.
So how has that helped you then? That kind of changes your inner dialogue when you're faced with a new project. How do you try and take that to heart, I guess?
I think it starts you off thinking, instead of this is going to be way too hard or maybe I'll fail, it begins with, well, okay, so I've got to start somewhere. And like, let's break it down into the tiniest little things so that if you achieve, you know, a couple of tiny steps at the beginning of something really difficult, it kind of makes you feel not so silly.
Yeah.
and it, you know, you are very aware that you are bumbling through it, or that something's difficult, or that maybe someone's better at math than you, and so this algorithm's going to take them half the time to figure out. But the fact that, you know, you're obviously not going to be bumbling through something in the way that someone else is in a particular topic. So you might find one topic's much easier for you, but it's much harder for somebody else. And so knowing that you don't have to show like an upfront talent for something, you know, in order to, one, give it a go, and two, you know, deserve to have fun with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a great point. I've actually found that the people that I admire, now that I'm working with them, I do see that they don't know everything right off the bat. But what is impressive is how quick they are to pick things up, or how determined they are. Like, even if they don't pick things up quickly, they'll stick with it until they've conquered the beast, so to speak.
That's right. And I mean, I listened to Brad Frost's intro, and he was described as like a robot that just can pick things up, right? And so, you know, those kind of people are super intimidating. And I'm sure if you talk to them specifically, though, they'd say, well, it's not actually really true. I just kind of got obsessed with something for 3 days straight, and that's the only reason why I was able to kind of like pick it up, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And half the time that's it, right? It's not so much that they always learn things faster. Sometimes people do, but oftentimes it's that they just seem so excited and so interested that they're less likely to give up when things get a little rough.
Exactly.
All right. So is there anything that has seemed to come easily to you when you've been trying to learn, or is there anything that's come specific, like particularly difficult for you?
I think it's super surprising, because those who know me know that I'm actually quite introverted and I'm very quiet and also very anxious. And so surprisingly, I found public speaking is really, really simple for me to do. And I think part of it is, if you're anxious and you're introverted, you have to kind of fake, you know, your social interactions a little bit, and you have to fake that confidence. And you get so used to doing that every day that when you're asked to get up on a stage and talk to everybody, it's probably almost equally as terrifying as just talking to people in real life. So you kind of, to me anyway, so you can apply
the
exact same stuff. You know, you can apply all of the lessons and the pattern recognition, you know, with reactions in people and things like that. You can apply that to the exact same situation. And if anything, when you're public speaking, it's very one-sided, and so you're not freaking out about what the people are going to say or think or anything like that, because they've come to see you and they want to hear what you say. And so it almost removes that pressure from having to be constantly analyzing the dialogue as it's coming in and out of the person you're speaking to.
Yeah, I know. I totally relate. I had a family reunion this last week, and to be honest, I enjoy being with family, extended family, but to be honest, I am a bit more at ease when I'm at a technical conference than I am sometimes like talking to people that aren't in our industry. And so I find that just the common topic makes it easier to talk to people oftentimes. But getting in front of a group, I love it. I love public speaking when it comes to tech conferences. I think it's a blast.
Yeah, I feel the same way. And I've always kind of, that's always confused people a lot. They just can't understand why I like it so much, because they can't imagine anything worse, or, you know, they know what they want to say, but as soon as they get up, it just disappears for them. And so I felt very lucky to kind of have that weird, I guess, contradiction of skills there, for sure.
All right. So how did you get into it then? If it was something that for some people they would have assumed that wouldn't have come as naturally, was it hard for you to get into it, or did you notice pretty early on that it was pretty comfortable?
I think it started when I was in college. I just did a community college, like what's it called? An associate's degree in America, you guys call it. I did an associate's degree in like interactive media. And a lot of that was, you know, installations and having to explain your project to somebody and having to present that. And we got a lot of practice presenting. You know, they would try and get us spots in kind of public galleries where we could talk about, you know, how cool our project was and stuff like that. And so I got used to just having to get up and just do it, because it was such an advantage. And I think that was much earlier than the time when I started getting really afraid of people and socially interacting. And so it was almost that I learned how to public speak before I learned how to have a conversation with somebody.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting. So if you had somebody now who mentioned to you that they'd be interested in getting into public speaking, is there anything that you would recommend to them for getting started?
Yeah, I think focusing on things that you just love so much that you can't help but not shut up about them, I think that's definitely the first place, you know, you should be looking for. Okay, so public speaking is a thing on it by itself, but also within that, you know, what are you going to talk about? And so if you ask somebody to talk about something such as doing taxes, they're going to really struggle. They're not interested in it. They probably don't know a lot about taxes. And they also don't want to look stupid in front of everybody else when they're presenting, right? Mm-hmm. But if you ask somebody about why they separate all the colors in the M&M jar, you know, like, why do they do that? They could probably spend 10 minutes explaining very eloquently and to a large group of people why they do that, because it means something to them, you know?
Yeah. And there have been times where I've been filling out like forms for conferences, you know, the proposals. And when I was early on, I would talk to the organizer and I'd say, okay, what do you want me to speak on? And I think that's kind of the wrong question. I think you're right. It's about more, what are you passionate about? Because if you told somebody like, hey, you need to go speak on Node, but they don't use Node, and they could probably get something together in time, but it just wouldn't be the same.
I completely agree with that. I was asked to do a talk recently at a dev meetup, and they said, I know this is a dev meetup, but can you come and talk about 3D printing? And for those that know me well, they know that that's kind of my thing. That's what I'm known for. That's something that I speak about a lot. And so over the last probably 5 years, I've done a lot of like, what is 3D printing and how can you get into it? And it got to the point where I started getting sick of my own talk, even though I tried to change it. And so I wasn't able to deliver it very well anymore because of that. And so I decided to kind of play a joke on them. I'm like, sure, I'll do 3D printing. And what I ended up doing was I turned up and I said, I promised I'd talk about 3D printing, but I'm actually going to talk about something within that, which is G-code. And G-code is the machine language that things like 3D printers and routers and laser cutters actually understand. And that's what they interpret in order to, you know, cut out a picture of a cat or something like that, you know, or 3D print, you know, the latest, you know, turtle that they found on Thingiverse. And so I did the talk about that instead. And it was the first time I'd ever talked about machine language and how quirky it is and how it's got a deep history and there are lots of different international standards and, you know, how easy it is to actually tell a machine to do a certain instruction. And all of a sudden that, you know, I had that kind of fire back and the twinkle in my eye. And I think that it was a much better talk than I could have given than if I'd just done what the organizers actually asked me to do.
Okay. So, and how was the response?
People got really excited and they didn't realize how easy G-code was. But then of course, at the end, after a couple of G-code questions, they're like, oh, so like, can you 3D print in, in, you know, watermelon, or can you 3D print in ceramics, you know, and I got the really cool questions. And I feel like that's probably a better way of doing it, you know. You can't assume the knowledge of the audience until you actually get there and ask them. And so I might have been telling them a whole bunch of information they already knew, and what they really had was those kind of weird, quirky, pressing questions, you know, and so I think that worked out quite well.
That's awesome. Okay, so I love following you because I have this inner desire to get into 3D printing, but I haven't figured out what to do with that. Like, anytime that I'm learning something new, like a new language as a developer, or even from a designer standpoint, like if I'm learning some new design, I don't know, principle that people are using, something like responsive design, right? Like, that's something that's easy for me to apply to projects that I'm already doing. How could we get web developers and web designers more involved in things like 3D printing? Is there kind of like gateway projects that might be able to suck them in a little bit?
That's actually a really good point. And I find that 3D printing is kind of like programming. Like, it becomes this disease that just takes over your brain. And so you start seeing problems in the world as things that you can solve with either programming or, you know, whatever you're into, right? And so especially software engineers, they're huge problem solvers, right? And I think that that bleeds very much into things like manufacturing and 3D printing and things like that. And so I'll give you an example of that. I was staying in a hotel recently and I was having a shower. And, you know, I was washing my hair, you know, you don't really know where to look, right? You're just standing in the shower alone. So I look up at the curtain rod and, you know, it was one of those shower curtains with the holes in it. And then you have hooks that hold it up onto the rail. And there was a hole that didn't have a hook that was holding, you know, the curtain up in that spot. And, you know, you can imagine that's going to irritate anyone who either likes order or doesn't like things missing, or people who are problem solvers, right?
Yeah.
And so in my head, I'm just standing there and I'm like, and there's a 3D printer in my hotel because I was doing a talk on 3D printing. And I was like, oh, all I wanted to do was rinse my hair out and go and 3D print a hook and then just put it up on the rung and then everything was okay again. You know? And so I think that software engineers are amazing problem solvers, and it's a big reason why they got into software engineering in the first place. And same with designers. They want to solve a problem. They want to make it easier for a user to do something. And I think that having that approach or that application to get into 3D printing, like, is there a problem I need to solve? Can I learn how to be more kind of independent and autonomous, you know, so that I don't have to go to a store and buy something to repair something with, or I don't have to call someone to fix something? I think becoming a problem solver in real life, you know, especially since there's this huge, huge like kind of trend with life hacks right now, right? And I'm not a huge fan of that word or that definition, but I think getting people to apply their problem-solving skills outside of their normal profession actually gets people really excited, which is another reason why NodeBot Day is so successful as well.
All right, yeah. So NodeBot Day actually sounds fantastic because it's a bit into the physical. There's not a lot of 3D printing that you're doing with that, though, right? These are more of kits.
Right. So I love that you mentioned that because, first of all, the kits actually have some 3D printed parts in them,
okay,
which is awesome. And on top of that, we found that last year people were becoming pretty ingenious about what they did to their robots. So after lunch, we noticed all of a sudden that there were all these plastic forks and knives ending up on the robots. And so people had stolen them from the lunch supplies. And we had everything from spinning fork propellers on the front to kind of, you know, try and flip the opposition, to people using the curved nature of the forks to actually create almost like a shovel at the front of the robot to kind of pick people up and push them off the edge. I thought that was absolutely brilliant, like so hilarious.
That's cool.
And so we were thinking, imagine if we had a 3D printer there. And, you know, there's a lot of websites where you can download pre-made parts for robots. You don't even have to sit there and waste time designing things. So imagine if people could print really funny kind of add-ons for the robots. And so that's why this year we actually have two 3D printers that are going to be there and available for people to use to trick out, I guess, or pimp their robots.
That's awesome. I noticed in last year somebody had just like the Krispy Kreme wrapper or something from the box it looked like they had cut out and put on the front. It just,
yeah, so
you're just sitting in a room working on something and you're like, oh, I could use that.
Yeah, I think it made everyone feel like they were kids again, right? They had to kind of scrounge and say, well, I want this and I don't have it, so how can I do this? And I think that's kind of what contributed to the success of the day. Like, no one's robot looked the same, even though everyone had the same kit to begin with. And that was so awesome.
That's cool. All right, so that sounds like a great kind of gateway project. Whenever I've helped teach designers how to get into web, because that's kind of a normal thing that I've helped teach some of those classes before at a couple of universities. I always start with, well, let's start with building a portfolio. Because if I start by trying to, you know, we prepackage this thing that they have to build, and I have these steps that we follow step by step, they're not going to be interested in it. But as soon as I say, hey, let's build something that you want to, that you're interested in, they learn the tech a lot faster. So that's what...
100%. Yeah.
So that's what I've been looking for, right, is... What's that gateway project for me for 3D printing that will give me an excuse to go and spend money on a printer? Because I need one. I need one. I don't know why, but I need one. So
it's pretty amazing. Like, I procrastinated buying one for my house for so long. And, like, you know, I've been into it for quite a long time now. And now I can't imagine being without it. You know, the little things like this... You know, I don't have a tripod attachment to put this particular device on my tripod. And so, you know, 20 minutes later of, you know, bumbling my way through, if you, you know, based on our conversation earlier, kind of bumbling my way through trying to create a part, you know, 3D model it. And, you know, in less than an hour, you can already have solved the problem. And I think that that's really exciting. Like, having a custom project that's personal to you, that you've wanted to sort of do for a long time, or a problem you've wanted to solve for a long time. There's no greater feeling of accomplishment than, oh my God, I did this thing that enables me to do something that I haven't been able to do before.
Yeah. Ah, very cool. Okay. So I will figure out a way to get one and do something
awesome.
With it. Is there any other advice that you have kind of picked up along the way? We've kind of gone on a tangent, and that's totally awesome. That's what I love about these interviews, but is there anything else that's kind of stuck with you as far as advice that you've received or kind of anything you've picked up along the way?
I think another thing is don't be afraid of speaking up, like, when you're vulnerable. I think a big thing that people do is they hide their weaknesses. They hide anything that they can't see reflected in the people around them. And so I kind of squashed a lot of things in me and tried to become more like people around me in my industry. And so, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that I'm quite a minority in tech. You know, I'm a woman. And so, you know, I would try doing things like dressing down, you know, and not dressing feminine, because, you know, that was such an opposite of what you see. And, you know, because it's all guys, and a lot of guys don't really like wearing dresses, so it's kind of hard to find people, you know, in the industry that are looking similar to you, especially when you're the only girl in the office. And just things like, if somebody doesn't have, let's say, anxiety, and they don't understand it, it can be really scary to speak up and actually tell people that that's something you suffer from. You know, you're afraid of judgment, you're afraid of stigma, you're afraid that people will think you're making excuses. And you're afraid that, you know, if you're seen as someone on the outside, that you will actually be excluded as a result of it, because people aren't comfortable with you being different. And in the last few years, I've really looked up to a lot of people on Twitter and on social media who speak out about this stuff. And so since doing that myself, making people aware in my life, in real life, that I have these issues, but also speaking up online about it, kind of helps people who are also afraid to speak up, it helps them feel like, you know, they belong, and that they also have other people that represent them, you know, in their industry. I think that's really important.
And I love the way that you've handled it online. You don't, I mean, it's not a part of your, bio. It doesn't feel like you're always projecting, hey, this is what I am. This is how I'm different all the time. But at the same time, you don't hide it. You're not afraid to talk about it. You're not afraid to mention it, because that's really what's happening. And I feel like you use social media the way that it should be used, not as a platform for getting messages out that you want other people to hear, but to actually talk about yourself and how you're dealing with things. And I think that's awesome.
Right. You can't just kind of bark a gender at people and expect them to take a almost like, you know, see themselves in that or take a personal kind of interest. You have to kind of break it down to a bit more of a kind of gritty, uncomfortable, you know, personal experience. And it took me, you know, I've been in the tech industry for 10 years now. It's taken me 10 years to realize that that I can do this and that it's not going to have huge ramifications for me. And if anything, it's going to improve the relationships that I currently have both online and offline.
Yeah. And you're not talking about things that you're dealing with because you're expecting someone else to come in and fix your problems for you. Like, you do just a great job, again, like I said, of just kind of telling people what you're actually experiencing.
I really appreciate hearing that from someone. Thank you so much.
Yeah. There have been some things that my family has been going through a little bit lately, and we're just kind of figuring out, like, how much is public and how much do we want help. And I found that every time that we mention something about it, we get support. We don't get, I don't know, you expect maybe criticism. Sometimes people do criticize, or maybe you just expect people to see you as being just a little bit weaker. But no, it's been supportive. It's been fantastic.
I think it's also a useful filter. It can be very hurtful to lose people as a result of that. But if enough people stick around, it's worth it to be able to figure out, you know, who the people who are actually going to support you are.
All right. So that's great piece of advice. Let's kind of sum it up. First is no one knows what they're doing. And then we went off on 3D printing, which is great. and node bots. And then the second one is kind of don't be afraid of your vulnerabilities, or don't be afraid of what makes you different. Is that a mm-hmm. good way to sum it up? Or
that is an excellent way of summing it up.
Okay.
Yes.
So then let's move on to the second question is, and maybe this might tie a little bit into that second piece of advice, but is there anything that you've had to learn the hard way that if you could kind of go back in time and talk to past Sues that you would give yourself advice about?
Yeah, I think that would definitely be one of them for sure. It's something that I really benefited from in the immediate. But I'm also not sure that, you know, all these years ago before social media was a big thing, that it would have been something that people understood, or it would have been a platform that would have been useful for that, because it kind of took a while for people to figure out what social media was going to be, what it was useful for. And so I think that it's probably there's a really good segue from the advice that I talked about bumbling into things. And the interesting lesson that I actually learned from that, and very much the hard way, was that I used to think that, like, my intelligence and my abilities and everything like that was finite. You know, I thought I got to a certain stage that when you finish high school and, you know, the particular strengths and weaknesses you had there and how much you struggled with math or how much you were good at chemistry were actually kind of a finite indicator of how you were going to be for the rest of your life. Mm. And I'm not sure whether that was a self-confidence thing or whether that was just, you know, some kind of strange conditioning that we get from society, but thinking that my learning was finite pretty much destroyed a lot of opportunity for me to become a lot better at my craft, you know, a lot quicker. You know, I'm finding that I'm having to catch up with that a lot, and I'm having to push a lot harder to become more technical. You know, there's people in the industry that are way better at web development than me who have been in the industry for half the amount of time. And that may be because, you know, they've had the advantage of feeling like they belong in the community to begin with. You know, maybe that was part of the reason why I thought that I wasn't very smart, because I just didn't see people that looked like me or behaved like me in the industry. But also just the fact that you don't have to accept your current knowledge if you have the opportunity to pursue improving it. And so there are books out there, there are tutorials, and actually knowing that you can be actively pursuing, you know, lifelong learning every single day is one of the most exciting discoveries I made. And it seems so obvious, but I honestly was so down on myself that I thought that was who I was, and that was who I was going to be, and I was never going to be as good as all the people that I looked up to. And finding out that people bumbled through things was probably the biggest, I guess, breakthrough that I had with trying to learn this lesson, I guess.
Was there any event that kind of helped you break through that, or was it just kind of a realization for, no specific reason?
I think one of them was I saw a public speaker a couple of years ago, and they just blew me away. They were doing these incredible things with hardware, and they were, you know, and coupling that with software, and the way that they talked about it, I just thought, wow, imagine if I was as smart as that. I just, you know, and I all of a sudden just felt my limitations. And it turns out that, you know, eventually I got to have a discussion with that person. And it turns out that they thought they were the dumbest person on the planet. And they talked about how even at that stage, even at the stage of not thinking they're very smart, even though they clearly are, that they look back at their previous work and, you know, it's terrible. And they can actually see the progression that they've made. And that even though they think that they're still not there, they've actually pursued so much learning and taken on so many kind of lessons and education in order to get where they are. And that actually was, you know, it was a completely different version of themselves in the past because of that education. And so they don't see themselves the same way. And they also know that if anything is difficult and they learn how to do it, they're going to look back and think, wow, that's actually really easy now. So what's my next challenge? And so that was super inspiring for me to say, well, you know what, like, I idolize this person, but maybe I'm like that too. You know, maybe I have the potential to be able to really grow, you know, and that it's obviously hard work, but it's something that is possible. I don't have to accept that, you know, my current state of knowledge, you know, provides all these limitations. You know, how about I go about trying to remove those limitations one at a time through getting really excited about learning things? And there's going to be failure, and that doesn't mean that I'm not growing. It means that there needs to be another way for me to learn a particular piece of knowledge.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, even if you do find some limitation, it just seems like a better attitude to go through life with, if I give something enough effort and if it's something that I care enough about, that I will figure out how to do it.
And it seems like such a no-brainer when you say it, right? But then when you think about, do I embrace that every day? Or do I other myself out of that and just think that that only applies to other people? And I think that was my problem. I was like, that's okay for everyone else, but I'm really stupid and I'm going to be like that for the rest of my life. You know, I don't deserve to even try, because if I fail, it's just going to be further proof of that, you know?
Yeah, and I feel like your shift that you've talked about, going from development and getting into this hardware space and the physical and the 3D, that definitely feels like a platform of growth for you, that if you had let your limitation kind of keep you at bay, you probably wouldn't have gotten into.
100%. I think what helps with the 3D printing was I have 3D modeling experience from college. Mm. And so I thought, okay, I have this one thing where everything is not completely new. And so I thought, what if I just 3D model something and threw it up into like an external 3D printing services, you know, servers. And then what if I ordered it? Like, there is almost, I have nothing to lose except for a couple of bucks that it cost me to get it printed. And I think that barrier there really taught me that, well, really it really is just one step at a time. And it really is, well, if it had come back terrible, I have something then to iterate on. And again, no one wakes up perfect at everything.
Yeah.
And that you deserve to be able to play with things, even if you failed. That doesn't mean anything. It means that you didn't particularly succeed at something, but you had like a hell of a time and a hell of a lot of fun doing it.
All right. So then what is your kind of habit for learning then? If it's something that you try and do now more regularly, is there some kind of procedure that you go for to get yourself in the right state of mind to learn something new?
Yeah, I tend to giggle when something is making me confused. And so if we have a bug at work and I can't figure it out, I start laughing. I don't know why. I just think it's so hilarious. Like, I love bug fixing. And, you know, with bug fixing, you've always got somewhere to start. So I think all I need to do is break it down to the first task. And, you know, if I can get through that and the next thing seems difficult, make a game out of it. Make it funny. Like, make it that it's not that you're stupid, it's just that you will laugh afterwards when you realize what the problem was and that you fixed it. And so making it seem like the uphill battle is actually meant to be fun, and getting to the end is not the most important bit. It's kind of like, it's the growth that you had while you were doing it, and being able to look back and go, oh, well, I fixed that, and I just had absolutely no idea what was wrong 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And now I do. And I think people look down on yak shaving. They look down on going off on tangents. But as long as you get back to the original problem, there's absolutely no harm in doing that either.
Yak shaving. I've never heard that phrase before.
You've never. So yak shaving is kind of when, you know, you have a problem to solve. And then in order to solve that problem, you come across the fact that you have to solve a completely different problem again in order to come back to the original problem. And so yak shaving can be unintentional in that way. You're like, oh, now I have to fix this because this isn't going to allow me to fix the other thing. And then sometimes it's just a willful tangent. You're like, this problem here that I found as a result is so much more interesting and is going to offer me so much more growth. And I guess I'll eventually get back to the other problem. And if I don't, it's not a big deal. It might actually take me to something even better. And I think people look down on people going off on tangents, but I think that there's a lot of really funny stories and a lot of enjoyment that can come out of those. So that's kind of in a nutshell what yak shaving is.
That's awesome. Okay. And it ties totally back into your first piece of advice, which is no one knows what they're doing. I think bug fixing is like the best way to learn something. When you think you know how to solve a problem and you go and you implement it and it doesn't work out the first time and now you've got to go back and really figure out what went wrong, like that's where you really learn how things work. Yeah, so I think that's fantastic advice.
Yay. And I mean, I've been doing 3D printing for 5 years. And even a few nights ago, I had everything set up perfect on my printer. I pressed print and it was a complete disaster. A complete disaster. And it would be super boring if every print came out perfect. And so, you know, you're forced to come back and start bumbling again, even when you think you know things. So, yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, and the bug fixing, that's when I really realized, like, that's real development. Like, you take classes and they teach you about computer science, whatever you want. But when it comes down to it, it comes down to troubleshooting. And that's when you find real professionals are people who will dive in and solve real problems that pop up and will try new things when they can't figure out what's going wrong, that they'll just kind of keep banging away at it until they figure out something.
Absolutely. There's no such thing as bugs if people weren't going to be learning in the first place. You know, you can write perfect programs, but that doesn't teach you anything. It teaches you that you have some logic and you can recall syntax, but it doesn't actually make you a better developer. And I think people should embrace bugs more. And again, I get the giggles. I think bugs are hilarious. And if you chase one down for 5 hours, and you learn a lot along the way, they're some of my favorite moments, as opposed to coding an amazing feature for a website. Like, I think actually bugs are my favorite thing ever in development.
That's awesome. Okay. So, We're getting close to running out of time, which is great because we've had some great topics of conversation. So I just want to do a quick recap. We talked about already, no one knows what they're doing. Don't be afraid of your vulnerabilities or your differences. And then kind of I feel like we tied back into it again. No one knows what they're doing a little bit with the things you've learned the hard way.
Very much so.
It's interesting. It's amazing how we get advice sometimes. And even though someone tells it to us, sometimes it still requires us to learn things the hard way. Even though we already know. Yeah. Even though someone already told us. But yeah, and don't be afraid of jumping in and simplifying problems and finding solutions. And don't be discouraged by them. And don't be afraid of shaving the yak.
Yeah, very much.
These are great. Okay, so before we go, I just wanted to mention for people listening to the episode that they should go follow you on Twitter. You're NoopKat, NOOPKAT. Right. And you have great resources for 3D printing as well as the development stuff that you do as well. And then the NodeBot days. So we talked about it a little bit before we started the recording. But it's github.com/nodebots/nodebotsday. And there's all of these locations where people can go and do it. And if you're in Vegas, which you should be, you'll be handling that. You'll be organizing that. And that's in, where's the location? Is it going to be at the Sin Shop?
It's going to actually be at Palolu, which is a local electronics store, which is awesome because they're fantastic. And they've been doing everything from supplying us with all the robotics parts to giving us a really cool venue for people to be in.
Okay. And is that where it was last year as well?
No, it was at the Innovation Center last year, which was really, really fun.
Yeah, great space. And then lastly, if you're in Vegas, you should also check out the Syn Shop. It's synshop.org, where you just have some fantastic tools and toys to come mess around with and learn something new.
It's a very magical place. And if you want to attend a class or do a tour, you don't have to be a member to do so either. So we are very, very open and welcoming to new people coming through, even if you're out of town.
Very cool. All right. Well, thank you so much, Suze. We appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you so much. This was really fun.
Suze is an excellent member of the community in Vegas, and I'm really glad that she was able to be on the show. As she mentioned, how it's important to not be afraid of our differences or our vulnerabilities. And this is something I've been learning in a new way recently. In the last month, our oldest daughter was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. And I was catching up with a friend at OzCon this last week, and I was filling him in on her diagnosis when someone interrupted us and asked, are you diabetic? And I answered, no, but my daughter was recently diagnosed. He then responded that he was diabetic and that the open source community has been doing work on getting better access to data stored in diabetes-related devices, like my daughter's insulin pump and continuous glucose monitor. And I share this story to illustrate a point. We really are a part of a community of problem solvers, and if we need help, it is likely that we can find someone experiencing something similar if we can be comfortable enough to share and ask for help if needed. Before I go, I want to thank our sponsor again, Campaign Monitor. Also, Good Stuff makes it possible for you to listen in live to Web Friends interviews every Friday at noon Pacific on goodstuff.fm/live. Go follow WebFriends.io on Twitter, and go leave a review for the show on iTunes. You can find that all on WebFriends.io. And of everyone I appreciate, I want to thank you most of all for listening and for sharing the show. You are awesome.